It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for January 1st. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. It's January, and for many techies, that means time to head to the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. The massive, decades-running event is where companies big and small try to shine among a sea of glinting hardware products. Software, too. Some of the things unveiled proved to be game changers. Others proved to be snake oil. What's going to be big at this year's event? Next week, we're sending Marketplace's Nova Safa to the show to find out. But first, here's a preview.
CES this year is preoccupied with pretty mundane objects.
Things like your toothbrush or your door locks.
That's Sean Dubrovac. He's the chief economist for the Consumer Electronics Association. Dubrovac says last year was a turning point in the move to take everyday objects and connect them to the internet. And this year, there are more such objects than ever.
So, for example, Adidas has a connected soccer ball and will measure your kick, how high it was, how fast it's rotating.
Obviously, there's privacy and security risks.
Adam Fearer, who's attending CES, is a technology policy researcher at George Mason University. He says consumers need to be more careful, but companies do too.
To make sure that these new technologies are as secure as possible and safeguard our information and do not share it too freely or openly.
Thier says this is something a lot of companies have to think about, from marketers to entertainment producers and car makers. In Los Angeles, I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Okay, today is the first day of 2015, and I have some pretty great news. Because it's 2015, we're taking a regular opportunity to go back. Back where, Doc?
Back to the Future!
Part 2, because in the classic 1989 movie about time travel, there were a lot of predictions about technology that would exist 25 years later, and now it's then, or now it's now. Either way, this is the first segment in a series we're doing this year called Back to the Future Part 2. In partnership with the website Gizmodo.com, we're going to explore a ton of the different technologies in the movie, whether we've got them yet, whether we don't, why not. It's going to be, as Michael J. Fox's Marty McFly says,
far out.
Okay, maybe nobody says that anymore, or maybe they'll say it again in the future. Either way, our regular guide to technology in Back to the Future Part 2 is Matt Novak, writer for Gizmodo's Paleo Future blog. Hi, Matt.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This is a really important movie for people of a certain age. Why?
I can speak very personally about this one. I was 6 when Back to the Future 2 came out, and it absolutely blew my mind. It's basically why I got involved in doing what I do, which is study past visions of the future. Obviously, as a kid, I was fascinated by the flying cars, the hoverboard especially. You know, the hoverboard is that piece of technology that we're still waiting for that I wanted so desperately as a kid and was convinced that I would have by now. So I think the movie really resonates with a certain generation of people who grew up on this very techno-utopian vision of the future.
Well, I am like you. I feel completely robbed that I don't have a hoverboard yet. Although I did get a consolation prize from Pizza Hut. I got the Back to the Future 2 sunglasses that they put out at the same time. So I felt pretty good about that. What are the limitations on this particular movie's vision of the future?
Well, I think that it is so focused on technology, and it relies on a lot of things that we haven't quite cracked yet. The hoverboard technology being the most symbolic. You know, we've seen a lot of people predicting hoverboards ever since the movie came out in various forms, but we don't really have a true hoverboard technology for a number of different very solid physics reasons.
This stuff is really cyclical in a way too, right?
Sure. You know, I think that it is interesting from my perspective, growing up on Back to the Future 2 and having that be my favorite of the Back to the Future movies, it's interesting to see people who thought that Back to the Future 2 was a total abomination. You know, millennials definitely, if I can use that term, forgive me.
No. I'm a proud millennial. I don't know if you are. I might be on the graying edge of millennial, but I'm a proud millennial.
Yeah, I'm a millennial as well. We grew up on this movie that gave us this peek into this optimistic vision of the future, which was pretty unique, because I think of, you know, even in the 80s and 90s, you know, as a kid, there were other visions of the future that weren't so great. You know, I remember learning about acid rain and how we weren't going to have any more rainforests and terrible eco-destruction. You know, throughout the 20th century, you can pretty much track how optimistic futures are by looking at economic conditions. Times during economic recessions, people are much more anxious around technology. They're not as optimistic about the future and feel like the robot especially becomes this symbol of something that is taking their jobs rather than something that will be their servant one day. So it's interesting to look at it from that perspective as well, as this sort of cultural touchstone when technology wasn't the enemy.
Matt Novak writes about the future that never was for Gizmodo's Paleo Future blog, and he's our guide for this series. Matt, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me.
You'll be able to find more of this series at gizmodo.com and marketplacetech.org all year long. We're pretty psyched about this, and we think some of you will be too, so we set up an email account. If you have any ideas about things you think we should feature, people we should talk to, or just any feedback you have, email us at DeLoreanHistorians@gmail.com. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.